What is queer?
What is queer?
¿Qué es queer?
What is queer?
What is queer?
Lesbian.
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 Androgynous.
Gay.
Gay.
Guy.
Two-spirit.
Bisexual.
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 Transgender.
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 Dyke.
Non-binary.
Intersex.
Intersexual.
What?
Yes,
is
honey.
Queer. Welcome back to another episode of What is Queer? I'm your host, Parker Sargent. To start off today's show, I want to ask, what is your safe space? Where do you go, literally, to feel like you can work on yourself? Today, we're going to further a recent discussion I had with my friend Emery Grant about an amazing new youth camp called Camp Beyond Binary, which operates in Ithaca, New York throughout the month of August. When I spoke with Emery about the camp's initiatives and how young trans and non-binary kids were finding support and freedom to be themselves, I got a little emotional. I wish someplace like this had existed when I was a kid. My safe space growing up was my bedroom. Alone with my thoughts, I could heal my psychological wounds by listening to Madonna music, watching old movies, and trying on outfits I would never be brave enough to actually wear to school the next day. There, in my safe space, I could ensure myself that I was not all the horrible things that I had been called that day, and that there was nothing wrong with me for being gay. What I would have given to have a place that I could go to even for one day that allowed me to explore my true self. How powerful it would have been to be with other kids that didn't mock me for my differences. Having a place like Camp Beyond Binary would have been a blessing. As I mentioned in our previous episode, Emery and I met a few years ago working together on a screening of my film, The Pansy Invasion, as a fundraiser for the Stonewall National Museum. Today, Emery is part of the founding admin team for Camp Beyond Binary and acts as the camp's LGBTQ historian. The mission of Camp Beyond Binary is to encourage justice, empathy, leadership, transformation, and belonging. It's a safe space where youth can find new friends, learn new skills, overcome new challenges, and be their authentic selves. While I don't bet we have a lot of listeners in their teens, this episode is for anyone with a young person in their life who is finding their gender identity outside the traditional limitations. The way Emery talks about working with the campers can directly relate to how we can treat queer youth in our own lives every day. Emery, you have worked in several quintessentially queer spaces over your years. When trans issues started to come to the forefront, did you find any resistance in these queer spaces?
I think the first time that I found resistance to trans people in queer spaces was many years ago in the 90s when I was attending a queer support group in rural in Watertown, New York, in upstate New York, and I befriended a trans woman who was talking about the kind of dichotomy for her of what it was like to be herself at home or in social spaces, and then go to work working in construction as it happened to be, and talking about what it was going to be like as she kind of advanced with her goals as far as manifesting her life. And some of the guys, cis gay men in our group would say, what does that have to do with us? And when she becomes a woman, or if she identifies as a woman, is she even gay? And I was surprised that their response wasn't welcoming, because I thought, well, she's obviously queer.
Yeah.
And aren't we all queer in this room? And why is that some kind of a sticking point with you? Because she's definitely not fitting into cishet normal society. And neither are we.
I always say that to people, like, I might have the privilege of being white. I certainly don't have any privilege in the gay world. I am considered other, and I will never fit into either world. It's like I don't have a foot in either space. And only as of recently, because of people doing work like you've done, that there seems to be a space for that, you know, that there can be a space for us. But I imagine back then, no space existed for that.
It was difficult to find spaces outside of drag. Mm. For me, the first spaces that I found were through works by like Lillian Federman and Elizabeth Lipovsky Kennedy and Madeline Davis's book, Boots of Leather Slippers of Gold, that were talking about like butch identities in Buffalo, New York and New York City. And like those lesbian communities were some of the first examples for me where I saw, in that case, butches living a daily life as what Leslie Feinberg or someone else might call a gender outlaw or something other than gay or lesbian. Otherwise, the most obvious examples were drag queens or drag kings, but not people who were living outside the margins of performance.
How do you respond to those people who are saying, well, if you're a trans woman, you're no longer queer, this space isn't for you? How did you handle that?
I think without sounding too academic, I think it has everything to do with how we use our bodies and how our bodies are legislated to be defined as being appropriately or inappropriately used for sex, for expression, for reproduction, for the way we gender and adorn ourselves to express our identities. As soon as we start thinking about laws that control what kinds of clothes we wear, how we can conduct ourselves at whatever hour with whomever we choose, we're talking about modes of moving through society as being queer, full stop. So there, I think we have to demand an inclusiveness and really examine privilege and power and oppression. And our commonality is gay and lesbian and trans and bi and queer and pan people, in that there are visible entities coming at us with legislation, some of which is been around for a very long time, some of which is being drawn out of the cobwebs to control our lives and deny our freedoms to exist.
We segregate ourselves into these groups, but to all the rest of them, we're all just a bunch of faggots. Whether you like the word or not, we've discussed that in other episodes. That is how the world looks at us. And so to divide ourselves up into these subcategories of queerness and who's queer enough, who is acceptable, who's going to make us look good, who's going to make us look bad. We're all in the same ship. We all need to be allies for each other as queer people. And again, what is so amazing about camp beyond binary is that you are creating a space that really is new and doesn't exist for people. So as you had this academic life of being in spaces that weren't so inclusive of trans people, did you see that change over time? Is that what inspired you to make this camp? Or is it because there were no spaces that you decided to embark on this journey for Camp Beyond Binary?
I want to respond to a couple of things that you just said.
I said too much. I'm sorry.
No, okay. No, please, you said all the wonderful things. I think the capitalist environment that we live in, and also power and privilege and structures of oppression, have groomed us, and I use that word intentionally, to police one another's language, even among queer circles, because there is power and privilege embedded in what circle you may run with or not, or how you may express your discomfort with maybe outliers, whether it's radical sexual expression, quote unquote, or polyamory, or different modes of identity that are maybe not monogamous or traditional, even in queer circles, gay circles, right? And to your point about a cishet or straight society seeing us all as just a bunch of faggots, sometimes we can get stuck on the nuance of our identities in our internal circles in ways that, I don't know. I don't know if I really want to go there. In some ways that aren't entirely helpful. Okay, but I'll bring it back to camp. Like I feel really strongly that language is really so very important. It's disruptive, you know, along the lines of that we need new words and different combinations of words and room to create the worlds that we can live in and explore our identities. And I think that's one thing that's very special about the environment of Camp Beyond Binary or other kinds of queer spaces. I'm using this queer summer camp as an example, and that the young people have an environment where there's less of a policing, like there's more freedom to use their own language or invent new language to describe their experiences and their realities without being defined by like a mainstream cishet culture or even queer culture. And it can be more specific to their experience within their generation. It doesn't have to be referenced by a naming of what their queer identity should look like by their elders' experience. And that's really important. One thing we focus on is camp leadership is not always drawing our personal experiences into the campers' lives. There may or may not be relevant. And to really lead with a listening ear into what it's like for their current cultural and political time of day and what their daily experiences are like.
One of my favorite places on earth, as many people have heard me say, is Cherry Grove Fire Island. The reason I wound up in that space is because my wife and I were seeking a space to feel comfortable wearing bikinis as we were going through our transition. And as adults, it was so valuable to be able to have that space where we could wear what we wanted, express ourselves the way we chose, and you bring that back to the real world with you. And it doesn't make you invincible, but I feel like it makes you a little bit stronger. These kids that are coming to your camp, I can't imagine that they don't have that same feeling, that they don't take that same jewel back to the world with them from being able to express themselves together. In Cherry Grove, we see so many more queer people coming out on the beach, proud trans bodies, like being open, not feeling like they are ashamed. So I know it's important. You know it's important. But I want to talk to queer people in our community that are not trans. And I want to express, why is it important that we have these queer spaces that are inclusive of trans people?
My interest is in building the confidence and the ability for trans people to thrive. And I think if we can provide spaces where, in this case, trans youth or at any age, trans people can develop their confidence in their character and more confident in their self-expression, I think that will only be an asset to the greater community at large. We need fully realized trans people in our community who are confident and successful and articulate and who don't have to struggle with as much of the neurosis and the anxiety and the depression that some of us have had to muddle through in our isolation. And therein is a vested interest in the young people at camp. I would love to see them not spend as much time on that stuff or worry about the awkwardness of, am I going to find my people? And what am I going to say when I find my people? How am I going to develop those relationships? How can we make, first of all, how can we nurture and establish environments where trans folk feel comfortable taking up space and manifesting themselves to lead by example in our own queer communities?
I am an old lady, as I've said many times. I want to know, what is it like for a queer, non-binary kid right now to come out? We say so much as a certain generation, you guys have it so much easier than we did. We suffered so much. It's so easy for kids to be out now. It's so easy for them to have gender expression. I think just because we're seeing it more doesn't mean that it's necessarily easier for them. But I don't really know. So what are they telling you about when they come to the camp?
What I'm hearing from many of them is that they know that they have so many options. And in their experience, they're trying to figure out what works for them and what sticks. And to have the permission to pick up and put down what works on any given day. And as they move through establishing more relationships, they may gravitate toward, invent, back off from different types of labels or ways of describing themselves. The camp provides them an opportunity to explore in a private space among their peers outside of school, where there isn't the lens of people who will talk or others who are outside of the queer community who will check in and may or may not report back to their friends or their family or whomever else. And all of that comes with the, in this setting, the kind of magic and wonder of being outdoors. Kind of surrealness of kind of being able to create your own reality to hopefully be able to wear what you want, travel with who you want, to some degree choose what kinds of activities that you might want to throughout the day, whether that is something, you know, athletic or more contemplative or artistic or STEM, cerebral, or, you know, whatever you're into, nature stuff. It gives the kids to play with who they are and learn about who they are through play, but as teenagers.
And you say, you know, create their own world, but of course, it's still reality. So how do you make the kids feel like this is a place of their own creation?
Last year was the inaugural year of Camp Beyond Binary, produced by Girl Scouts of Penn, New York. So it's basically a camp under the umbrella of the Girl Scouts. So we've got these wonderful facilities, and we named each of the buildings after queer icons. So we had like a Leslie Feinberg Hall, Gilbert Baker Hall, House of Frida was our art room, Alicia Garza Hall, which was outstanding. Urvashi Vad had a place there. We had this wonderful kind of free store of clothing that we called Auntie Kate's Closet. So it was named for Kate Bornstein. And it was a place where young people could get gender affirming clothing, whatever that looks like for them, and take it home and wear it throughout camp and whatnot. And two experiences that I had with young people, one young transmasculine youth, he, him pronouns, I would say, you know, what you would consider kind of male presenting, was after a skirt that he felt comfortable with because he missed wearing skirts, but he wanted to find something that was a little bit more neutral. And it wound up finding this knit stone gray, but with these sort of neon pleats like built in. And it was in just thrill this can be. Like, I miss wearing skirts, but I was trying to find something that fit me. Another kid, kind of a trans feminine youth, was thrilled to find a pair of leggings that they said they could wear with a cute scarf in the fall. Little things like just having the freedom to show up in clothing that maybe your friends or family aren't used to seeing you in, and giving you the room to explore without judgment. And even in just figuring out the ways that, you know, I'll say we, you know, as part of the trans community, how we move in our bodies and take up space in our bodies. Like swimming together was so stressful for all of us, young and older, staff and youth, until we did it together and gave each other room to be out and enjoy ourselves without fear of being policed or commented on, and really just be able to put down some of the dysphoria, or at least work through it, I should say, and allow ourselves to experience the abundant joy that so many people take for granted.
Let's talk about what they're coming from in their real world. Because as you just mentioned, you'd love to see these young non-binary queer kids spend less time
dealing with depression, spend less time dealing with body dysmorphia. That is a big goal, because the reality is we all sort of face that. So can we talk about, like, what are most of these kids experiencing back in their home world?
I think pathologization or diagnosis can be really important to treatment, but I also think that we have to make sure that there are support structures so people don't get stuck in feeling othered or sick, because I think that only adds to isolation. Their guardians, from what I've seen, are diverse. Some are fairly understanding of the vastness of queer, trans, non-binary identities because their parents are in their 30s and 40s in some cases, and they've had queer friends now for 20 and 30 years. I see some frustration come from the youth in the lack of understanding of gender and sexuality. Some of us as queer kids got pressure to, well, if identify as bi, you'll eventually wind up straight, right? Or if you're trans masculine, oh, does that mean you're going to find a cis woman and get married? I just see a lack of understanding in that gender and sexuality are fluid and can be combined in any combination, and that one person's life isn't going to be so linear. As, you know, young people gain more confidence and manifest healthy relationships, that may take them in directions that their parents didn't expect. Maybe they'll go from dating one type of person to another, or their friend group might change, or their identity might change. It's important, you know, we go back to labels, and parents are concerned for their kids, but they're also compounded by needing to increase their vocabulary and their understanding of what all is out there. When their kid says they're a demi boy, what does that mean?
I don't even know what that means.
Right. And if that changes, you know, next week, does it mean their kid's okay?
I think that that is something that we as queer people even need to accept, is that there are many different kinds of queer. And if someone's queer doesn't look like yours, that's okay. And so often when we're in a certain age group and we've experienced our queerness and we think we did it the right way, that's where it's supposed to stop. There's not supposed to be any growth past where we got. And we've gotten to a great place. We have rights that we didn't have, you know, 20 years ago, 10 years ago, 5 years ago. But we still can be so rigid about what is quote unquote acceptable. And I think that's the biggest problem with non-trans and non-binary people accepting other queer people.
I think there's an element of what does that have to do with me, but also I go back to power and privilege, and that, you know, not so long ago, I think, and in some circles still, there is a slice of the LGB community or the cis community that doesn't want to be associated with the margins because it's less safe. They might feel it's less safe for them.
How do you think someone gets past that? Actually, how do you get the kids to accept themselves? Like, right? Let's not even talk about the people who are against us. Like, what's the best method for kids to sort of start to accept themselves and find peace with themselves?
I think kids accept themselves until they're told that they shouldn't. And I think that the larger cis queer community could maybe take a note from what our heterosexual cis parents and relatives might have had to go through, and that the more queer people they got to know, the less we were the boogeyman that they were taught of in the 1960s or 50s or even 70s, in that we weren't predatory. We weren't all down a dark path of self-destructive despair, if you let us. And I think the same goes for youth, in that, you know, it's our responsibility to be as nurturing and as affirming as we can be. And that might be my retort to the question, well, what does that have to do with us? Well, why would you treat a queer young person with anything other than dignity and respect? How are they coming for you? I mean, I understand that there are some cis, gay, and lesbian people who might feel that quote unquote trans rights alienates them and their access to heteronormative veneer on their own lives. But I think that's a fallacy. The few fleeting protections that we have are hard to enforce when it comes to anti-discrimination laws. And honey, if a woman's right to choose can be snatched from her, who's to say that it will quickly become illegal for you and your cis male partner to cohabitate, let alone engage in, you know, sex or have a family? I think that it's really naive. And I think just make a call for plurality and unity as individuals who are part of a community where sexuality and gender has historically been policed.
You know, adversity makes us stronger. That is the reality of the world. That doesn't mean that we should all have to struggle. But I think some of the bite of our experience is being taken away.
Yes.
It's being cheapened, or we're being told it's not as powerful because, oh, you can be gay now, or, oh, look how much there is. I imagine that these kids are experiencing the same thing that I went through in the 90s, but yet the world won't let them feel it. Mm. They're telling them they're not allowed to feel it. You're supposed to feel more accepted. And that could really, I think, disable someone from getting to the destination quicker, you know, like actually dealing with their problems.
Yeah, like I'm thinking about resourcefulness. And if someone is telling you that you have the tools already and that you don't have to be resourceful, or there are already words to describe who you are, but you don't feel satisfied by that, that could be enormously frustrating and lonely.
And just leave you with an unknowing, or feeling like you're not good, like you're not as good as everybody. Oh, well, I guess these other queer people do have it together, and I'm not good at being queer. I'm not good at being the simplest thing that I am, you know, the core of myself. That's terrible.
I want to go back to thinking, how can, maybe we want to demand that our queer cis family owns up to the vastness of their own experiences and those in which they might not always talk about, and the nuances of our attractions and our desires and our feelings about things that aren't so clean cut, so clearly defined, and a little messy, and maybe a little more fleeting or transient.
Things have to get messy. I think in order to clean shit up, it's got to get messy. I always tell my wife that when we're taking on a project and she's like, you're making a bigger mess than when we started. Well, I have to, because I have to pull everything out of that fucking closet, and I got to look at it all, and I got to decide what goes and what stays, and then how to put it back and make it work. So it's got to get messy.
I'm kind of thinking about queer spaces like Fire Island, or as a microcosm, a trans and non-binary summer camp, or a place like Mishfest, or radical fairy environments where there is more freedom that's called for and needed so that people have safe places to explore.
That's why I think your camp is not only needed, it's revolutionary. It's just phenomenal that you're doing it. When I saw that picture of all the kids at your camp, so many smiling young trans faces, because that's not usually, you know, what we see, especially nowadays when we're seeing young trans kids, it's about the struggle that they're going through. So seeing all those happy faces, that's your hard work.
Thank you. We've received a lot of great feedback from their guardians that they're taking that back into their homes and in their schools and their, you know, daily experiences, and that, you know, that space gives them an opportunity to manifest and practice manifesting with confidence when they return to the mainland, so to speak.
This space that you are creating, Emery, and I know it's not just you, I know it's you and many hands helping. It sounds like heaven. I bet if there are any trans youth listening right now, or especially people who have trans youth in their life, I want them to know, how can they encourage the people in their lives who are trans or non-binary to get to your camp? How do they get there?
Now in its second year, Camp Beyond Binary, which is powered by Girl Scouts of New York Penn Pathways, You can find us online at campbeyondbinary.com. There you will find information about what camp is like, what the staff structure is like. It takes place this August 6th through 11th in one session, and then in a second session for different campers, August 13th through 18th. There is an application process. As far as the cost of camp, it's on a sliding scale, and we do our very best with financial support to not turn any camper away who is eligible and who might not have the means to be able to afford that week of activities and affirmation.
How do those of us who cannot go to camp because we're far too old, how do we contribute to the camp to help you make sure that those kids can get there?
Please, thank you. Visit campbeyondbinary.com to learn about all sorts of activities to support scholarships for the camp, to donate supplies to camp. We have a wish list. Learn more about staff opportunities we're hiring and other ways that you can contribute to the growth of this very special place.
Is there a long-term goal for this to become an ongoing thing, or are you still at the phase of, let's see if we can make it work?
In our first year, our goal was to sell out the camp, right? So we were able to fill slots with 50 campers, many of whom were funded, some of whom were fully funded, and conduct a successful 1-week-long camp, and so that we could come back in year two, which will be this summer of 2023, and the camp will now be doubled. We'll be able to accommodate 50 kids in 2 groups, so 100 kids over the course of 2 weeks. This is also going to entail that we double our staff, of course, so the camp is growing. Camp Beyond Binary is powered by Girl Scouts of New York Penn Pathways. One of our goals is to make this camp accessible at established Girl Scout camps throughout the state of New York that will particularly impact the lives of rural queer, trans, and non-binary youth who otherwise wouldn't have access to positive role models, peer groups, and affirming environments. So we've now doubled the size of our camp in year two, and we hope to expand to the rest of the Girl Scout camps throughout New York Penn Pathways in the coming years.
And kudos to the Girl Scouts of America.
The Girl Scouts has been extraordinary in standing by and affirming the lives of women and girls, and particularly trans women and girls, and expansively non-binary and queer kids, full stop.
I feel so much better about all those fucking Thin Mints I ate last month.
Buy more. I think the Girl Scouts have always been about, you know, they're strongly rooted in character building, which aligns perfectly with supporting the development of trans and non-binary youth. And that you can and should be, as a queer, trans, non-binary person, civic-minded and contribute to your community and be an active participant in your community, and that you have something to say and that your insight is valuable, and that, you know, we have a vested interest in making that sure that your trans, non-binary self is a community leader, whatever that looks like.
What a dream it would have been to be a kid at Camp Beyond Binary. So even though I didn't get to go, I want to say thank you, Emery, and all the admin team who make this dream queer space a reality. And once again, kudos to the Girl Scouts of America. They continue to teach young women to be independent and strong. If you know a young queer person who would benefit from attending Camp Beyond Binary, or if you want to support this important project, visit campbeyondbinary.com to find out more details. And as usual, if you want to know more about today's contributors, check out the show's description or visit our website, whatisqueerpodcast.com. Be sure to give us fabulous ratings and reviews wherever you're listening to this podcast. We greatly appreciate your support, and it helps new listeners find our show. Thank you for listening, and we hope you'll come back to shoot the shit with us again soon.